Going virtual with Maine summer events of all sizes. A staple of Maine's summertime fun are the events, races, and festivals held throughout the state. Some have been canceled or postponed, but many are reinventing themselves, either online or in other creative ways. From the trek across Maine to the Common Ground Fair, many events are going virtual this year. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Summer events are critical to many nonprofits as they bring in important funding for year-round programs, and they're important to Maine's economic health as a whole. Today on Maine Calling, we'll discuss how different organizations are trying to stay true to the spirit of their programming in spite of the pandemic. Are you planning to take part in a virtual event this summer? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The COVID-19 pandemic has ushered in a new era where we experience much of life remotely, on our screens. That applies to some of the events that make Maine such an interesting place to be. Festivals, shows, and gatherings of all kinds have gone virtual. Today, we'll talk about what these virtual events look like and whether they can substitute for the real thing. Joining me, Lynn Tillotson, who is president and CEO of Visit Portland, and Kelly McCormack. She is the development and marketing manager for the Maine Association of Nonprofits. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you think you will attend any virtual events this summer? Have you participated in anything virtually so far? If so, what was it like? Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Lynn, Visit Portland really serves as the Convention and Visitors Bureau for much of Maine. So you have a broad view of the kind of conferences and events that happen in our state. How has this industry been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic?
Oh, significantly. Tourism, and which includes leisure travelers, but also meetings and conferences and festivals and anything that brings somebody from outside of the state into a state, it's been just decimated, really. I mean, everyone is really struggling. The limitations on numbers have kept us all in very small groups, which affects most of the industry.
So let me ask you this. I think a lot of people are aware that big festivals like the Rockland Lobster Festival and the Beach to Beacon Road Race have been canceled. Those are the kinds of things that draw, what you say, leisure visitors to Maine. But tell us about the kind of business visitors. What's going on under the surface that people may not even know about in a typical year?
You know, meetings and conferences in Maine go under the radar a little bit because we don't have major convention centers, but they happen, and they happen often. And as soon as this all started happening, we started keeping track and touching base with some of our area businesses on the amount of group business that they were losing. And within speaking to some 32 businesses within just a few weeks, we had already calculated $58 million in lost revenue for the state of Maine for those businesses. That's only 32 businesses, and that was way back in April when we were gathering those numbers. It just continues to grow.
Mm. Kelly, nonprofits rely on events for fundraising and for raising awareness. Can you give us a sense of the scope of nonprofit organizations and the kind of events they hold throughout the year?
Yeah, absolutely. So as Lynn touched on, events are such a broad category, and this can cover classes, workshops, trainings, board meetings as it relates to nonprofits. And I would say, you know, nonprofits are facing these massive challenges. You know, are they going to be able to meet their budgets if they have to cancel fundraising events? If they're not canceling, what does it look like in its new iteration? There are a number of nonprofits that have postponed events and not yet canceled altogether because there's still a large cloud of uncertainty about what's the state of the world going to be like in the fall, and should they just kind of hang tight. So it's the uncertainty that a lot of nonprofits are sort of grappling with right now, and doing a lot of risk assessment to see, you know, if they don't do something in person, is the revenue still going to come out the same in a virtual event or not? So, yeah.
And summer is a big time for big events. I mean, some of these organizations, correct me if I'm wrong, whatever their summer event is, whether it's a road race or something like that, it's often their biggest fundraiser of the year, correct?
Correct. Absolutely. You know, some organizations, for example, the Sea Change Yoga in Portland, they had their biggest annual fundraiser scheduled just 2 weeks after we went on lockdown in March. And within those 2 weeks, they made the decision to go all virtual, and they did it successfully and beat their fundraising goals. So we have examples of things happening successfully, but then also there are those that can't necessarily pivot on a dime, and they're figuring out what's going to work for them, what do they have the capacity to do, what's going to stay true to their mission and reach the audiences that they're most seeking to reach and have an impact on.
Right. It's easy to imagine a yoga class online, especially earlier on when people were just craving some sort of human contact. I want to ask each of you, both you, Kelly, and you, Lynn. I'll start with you, Kelly. What so far have you found works and what doesn't seem to work so well?
That's a great question. What I think the virtual format allows is for a different storyline, a different timeline. And so, you know, a lot of people nowadays aren't doing the after work networking events. We aren't doing the social hours. And so they're rethinking, what does this time frame look like? You know, what can we do to not ask people to be in front of a screen for an extended amount of time? So for example, you know, the road races, I've seen those timelines have been extended for a month-long period where people can actively participate on their own time. And so I would say it's what is going to work for your organization. You know, people are trying to figure out what makes sense for them, what, again, stays true to their mission and is going to work for the audiences that they're trying to reach. You know, if your members and constituents aren't inclined to be in front of a screen, then what activity can you plan that is going to make it less screen time but more interactive for them in their own life, and then they can come back and share with others in a different way.
So that's sure. So I saw, for example, the Peaks to Portland swim race is not going to happen in the way that it usually does, but people are still asked to raise money and swim 2.4 miles over a certain period of time.
Right, and I've seen organizations are creating sort of tracking activity logs so that people can stay connected to one another and other, you know, activity participants during that time and share their progress with one another. So it's been cool to see how different organizations are coming up with these interactive tools, the use of social media, the use of video, getting people to do selfies. There's a lot of shifting of engagement and how that looks.
Lynn, what have you seen? Give us some examples of some things that maybe have happened so far that worked well, and maybe, without naming names, some that didn't work so well.
You know, I do agree that people are getting really creative, and people are offering what they have to offer in a different way, which is still keeping people engaged with their businesses and their organizations. And I think that's been enlightening and fun. It, on the traditional sense of the word meetings and conferences and group events, though, I think it's going to be hard to sustain. You know, we're all getting a little tired of the Zoom. Some of the ones that have not worked well are when you're trying to create a true conference where there's breakouts. That Zoom breakout thing is a little tricky. So those don't really work well. So I think if we're looking at the traditional meeting sense, you know, in a few years, in 2017, there were 1.9 million meetings that happened in the United States that generated almost $900 million in economic impact. So we have to remember that we've got to keep traveling and making those personal connections with people. But I am excited to see that people are getting creative in this in-between time that we have, which has been difficult for everyone. I think some of it might continue with small little meetings. I used to drive to Augusta once a month for a meeting with 8 people. Maybe that might not happen anymore. We might just do this via Zoom, but there's something to be said with human connection.
All right. Well, joining us now. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say one of the things, being a statewide serving organization, we have found virtual events to be way more accessible to everybody. And so it's been a nice opportunity to have people from all over the state be able to convene in one centralized place. But I'd be happy to talk about that a little later.
Yeah. Joining us now, Chris Newell with the Abbey Museum, where he is executive director and senior partner to Wabanaki Nations. Thanks for calling in, Chris.
Hi, everybody.
So I read about the Abbey Museum's Indian Marketplace this year, that it's changed. It's been such a big deal, growing every year. First, fill us in, remind us what the Indian Marketplace is, and then tell us what you did this year.
All right, absolutely. The Abbey Museum Indian Market is something that started, we were just in our third year, actually. And it's the only juried Indian market on the east of the Mississippi that happens on an annual basis. And when I say juried Indian market, I mean that the artists have to go through a process to get selected to actually make it into the market itself. Most of those occur in the Southwest, and we wanted to have a market that would showcase in the homelands of Wabanaki peoples some of the tremendous artists that we have here as well.
So much planning goes into creating it, and the first year was a success, the second year even more successful. How did you think about what you were going to do this year?
So this year, I'm new to the Abbey. I'm not new to Maine, of course, but just started this year beginning of March. But I do have experience with Indian markets, and also with a lot of the people that, originated the idea for the first Abbey Museum Indian Market. And, the idea is to keep it continually growing, to keep a larger presence every year, attract more people, attract more collectors, and make it something that is, got a great basis, a baseline of people that's coming on an annual basis. And so we're looking to build on the past successes. However, with the current coronavirus, pandemic that we're dealing with, having it in, the real space as we usually do was just not possible this year. So we made the very, very hard decision. We didn't like making the decision, of course, canceling the market. All of the artists we have got to know, many of them have been there all every year. And, we knew that this was going to be a hit to their finances. And so when it came to that, we pivoted rather quickly to the idea of creating a digital Indian market. And we were actually the first to actually do so. Many of the other large markets, like Santa Fe Indian Market, are announcing virtual markets this year. The Autry Museum, as well as Idlejorg, will be converting their markets to virtual markets. So we were, unwittingly ended up being the pioneer for holding these types of events online.
And how did it go?
It went really, really, really well. I mean, there's a million things that could have gone wrong with it, but one of the things that we went into it was we overplanned for everything. And, of course, things did go wrong during the broadcast. It's 6 hours. It was live. So we had an artist that tuned in at first, and we couldn't hear them. They were muted, and the problem was on there, and we had to make a shift in the schedule really quickly. So things like that happen on the fly. But overall, it was a tremendous experience. It gave a chance for people to meet the artists in their homes, in their workshops, see their art, have them talk about it for themselves. And you really get that first-person perspective on the state of Native American art in 2020, especially by high-level artists. You know, so there's you can have the opportunity to connect with the artists, and buy from them. But you can also learn about the state of Native art, not just in Wabanaki territory. The Abbey Museum Indian Market invites Native artists from all over the U.S. and Canada. So we had artists that were featured from the Southwest, from Canada as well, during the digital event.
Wow. So what does this mean for the future, Chris? I mean, I suspect that next May you're hoping to have the Indian Market back in place in Bar Harbor. Will there also be a virtual component, do you think?
So that's the question, right? You know, when it comes to all the pivoting that museums are doing to online, the expectation, what we're all expecting is even when we come back to some sort of normal or when we're able to have large public events still, there's going to be an expectation amongst the public of a virtual offering of some sort. So there's, a transformation that I think that is going to be happening with the way we offer the Abbey Museum Indian Market. I think, we were able to attract people from other countries during the broadcast from Hawaii, and I think there's going to be an expectation for something along that line. As a museum, we may have to pivot to learning how to use cameras well and do film lighting and all of that type of stuff. It's a new world when it comes to this, and that's what we're going to be learning to transform ourselves into going forward.
Well, Chris, thanks so much for calling in, and good luck. This is Chris Newell, the Executive Director of the Abbey Museum. Lynn, I'm wondering, as you listen to what Chris was saying about how this might change events going forward, how even if we do return to in-person, there still may be a virtual element. Do you see that happening in other kinds of events as well?
I think with what he's speaking about, I agree with him. I do think that being able to experience museums, cultural attractions, different things like that, there will be an element of virtual that's needed, because I love that he said there were people from all over the world that tuned in. And I'm seeing that in the tourism world, that more and more destination sites are showcasing what their businesses are doing on a virtual side of things, that they, people can experience something in their own home without, maybe they can't afford to travel across the world or across the country, but they can still experience it. So I foresee that element still staying.
All right. And what about you, Kelly?
I agree. I think hybrid events are absolutely going to be something to happen in the future. We don't know what people's comfort level is going to be. And again, the ability to live stream creates way more access, and people from all over are able to attend events. And I think that has a huge appeal.
And all of this is far less expensive than it used to be, right, Kelly? I mean, something like that, a place like the Abbey Museum may or may not have been able to afford to live stream a 6-hour event 10 years ago.
Agreed. Yeah, the teleconferencing abilities are certainly cost saving. And then, you think about venues and whatnot. I mean, that's a big impact for them, as well as, on the financial side for nonprofits. But the capabilities to live stream, the integration of YouTube and Facebook and Zoom makes things way more streamlined and affordable.
All right. Well, we are going to take a virtual, we are going to take a quick break. We're talking about virtual events. We're actually doing this live. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Breakwater in Portland, offering summer day camp programs for kids ages 3 to 18. Registration at enrichment.breakwaterlearning.org. Broadturn Farm, farm-driven floral design for weddings, special events, and home delivery. Details at broadturnfarm.com. And TrueLine, a full-service marketing and branding agency who believes in the value of local, independent journalism. Online at wearetrueline.com.
Welcome to Maine Public's This Is My Maine.
To me, Maine means resiliency, community, grit, interconnectivity, because in my community, we have the type of people who raise barns together, who pull each other's vehicles out of the ditch on a snowy day, and who sit in a local school gym on town meeting day and make decisions about every line item of the budget as a community, and then they eat beans together. To me, that is a snapshot of what it means to be a Mainer. My name is Sarah, I'm from Unity, and this is my Maine.
This is My Maine is brought to you through the support of Eaton Peabody, the Maine Community Foundation, and the generous support of members like you. Thank you. Go to mainepublic.org to experience more of Maine Public's celebration of Maine's first 200 years. Happy birthday, Maine.
The public is invited to attend any open meeting of Maine Public's Governing Board and Advisory Committee's meetings. For more information regarding specific dates, times, and locations of the Maine Public's open meetings, visit our website, mainepublic.org, or call Audience Services at 1-800-884-1717.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we're talking about virtual events and ways organizations are altering their plans due to the pandemic. My guests are Kelly McCormick, who's Development and Marketing Manager for the Maine Association of Nonprofits, and Lynn Tillotson, President and CEO of Visit Portland. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can post a comment to our Facebook page, tweet at Maine Calling, or email a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. And speaking of events, I want to mention that anybody who's always looking for something to do ought to go to the Maine Public Community Calendar. You go to mainepublic.org, events, and under that is the community calendar. Any kind of group can put an event on that calendar, and it is an incredible resource if you've never looked at it. And it is also posting not just live events, but virtual events right now. On the line with us right now, April April, I want to make sure I'm pronouncing your name right.
Hi, Jennifer. That's fine. April Boucher.
Boucher. Okay, great. Director of the Common Ground Country Fair with Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, or MOFCA. And thank you for calling in, April. Well, you know, it's one of Maine's most iconic festivals, and it's usually very much an in-person kind of experience. I mean, nothing like smelling the barn when you walk into the bunny barn or something like that. How did you make the decision to carry on with a virtual event this year?
It was a difficult decision to kind of make that, going from planning an on-site event to going to planning an alternative online event. But when we realized, when we got additional information from the governor's plan, that we needed to make a decision soon so everyone could plan, exhibitors, et cetera, because for many people it takes many, many months to prepare for the year, which is what makes the Common Ground Country Fair so amazing and awesome. So we wanted to let them know as soon as possible. But then we also got a huge outpouring from our planning team and even our staff that we really wanted to do something for our community that come September, we're all going to really need a Common Ground Country Fair. And so that's what kind of really gave us that momentum. And like, we really need to do something, amazing to bring us all together and share in those wonderful things that make it a wonderful community event.
So I know you're probably still planning, but as far as you can describe it, describe right now what you think the virtual Common Ground Fair will be like come fall.
Yes, so we've done a lot of discussions and visioning with staff and our wonderful volunteers. So we're looking forward to doing 3 days of live content for the fair, which is September 25th, 26th, and 27th. So please mark your calendar for the online event. So doing some live content, and that will be free content because we really want it to be accessible to everyone and for everyone to be able to partake and participate in the Common Ground Country Fair. We are going to be doing community creative and coordinator-driven content. So we're going to do the live content. And in addition, we're also going to be doing a content library so people can access it at any time, because I know people's schedules are very different with caretaking and farming and all of those wonderful things. So making sure that people can still access this wonderful content. We're also really looking forward to doing a robust online marketplace. One of the wonderful key aspects of the fair is the ability to go and support your local businesses to really see the wonderful products that they make. And we did do a survey, and one of the top items is people are still really looking forward to purchasing items from fair vendors. So really making that robust online marketplace. And we're really looking forward to still engaging and including our volunteers and stakeholders in the process and creation of this new online alternative fair, and making sure that, you know, all of our content is going to be in keeping with MOFCA's mission and with the fair goal. So it's very much going to feel like the Common Ground Country Fair. And even though we can't gather together, which is one of the main reasons why we all love the fair, that we'll still be able to put that spirit out there and educate each other and share and be able to support each other. And that's what we're really working towards for the fair this year.
Well, thanks so much for calling in. That was April Boucher with MOFCA, who is director of the Common Ground Country Fair. Going now to Kim Shamart calling in from the Trek Across Maine. Hi, Kim. Thanks for calling. What are you all doing right now?
Hi, thanks so much for having me on. So we are planning and executing a virtual Trek Across Maine event this year, which is certainly different for us. The Trek is traditionally a three-day, 180-mile fundraising cycling event for the American Lung Association. So we've definitely had to make some pivots and some adjustments to our plans for this year. But that's what we're doing, keeping the tradition alive. This is the 36th anniversary, and the Trek Across Maine is the largest fundraising event in the nation for the American Lung Association. You know, right here in Maine, we generally raise over $1 million each year. So we definitely, you know, with everything happening in the world, we had to figure out a way that we could continue the tradition, obviously in a different and unique way this year. And by transitioning to a virtual event, that's what we're trying to do.
And Kim, what do you hear so far? How many people have signed up for the virtual trek?
So before we made the transition to virtual, we had about 1,100 people signed up for our traditional event. And since we made the announcement that we would be adjusting to the virtual platform, we have actually registered over 160 additional participants for the event. And 91 of those are brand new participants that have never been a part of our trek before. So the response and the support that we've received, both from, you know, folks coming in that are brand new, and then from our existing pool of cyclists and volunteers, has been just amazing. We've been so grateful.
Wow. Well, congratulations, and thanks for calling
Jennifer.
In. That was Kim. Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to add, the Trek Across Maine is a great example of extending the timeline, and I was wondering if Kim might share a little bit about how they took those 3 days and decided to go for a whole month, and what that allows for participants.
Yeah, of course. So we made the announcement that we were changing to a virtual platform on April 13th. And of course, the trek is traditionally on Father's Day weekend every year. So, you know, the 180 miles of cycling over the course of 3 days. And what we decided was we reduced our fundraising minimum because we certainly wanted to be sensitive to the fact that fundraising and asking people for donations during this time is more challenging than ever. So we reduced our fundraising minimum to $250 per person. And we also made it so that the cycling component wasn't a requirement in order to participate. Certainly, we're still encouraging our participants to get out on their bike and choose a mileage goal for themselves and share with us how they're doing towards that goal. But we didn't want to make that a requirement, because we wanted to also make it so that the event, now that it's virtual, is really more accessible to anyone that wants to participate. And we found that by extending, you know, the event all the way through the end of June, it's really giving people that opportunity to, you know, put some mileage in their own time if they are choosing to do that. And it's also giving them more time to do that fundraising component, especially knowing that it's probably going to be more challenging. So we've had a really great response, and it's been really encouraging to see that within our Facebook group, which has been very active, people are sharing, you know, selfies as they're out on their ride. A lot of them are actually still going to be riding in their own community this weekend to celebrate what would have been the traditional event. So it's just been so exciting to see the encouragement and the sense of community for those folks that are going to be missing seeing each other in person this year.
Well, Kim, thanks for calling in. And Kelly, thanks for your question for Kim. Also, now we're going to Julia Batchelder. She's calling in from the Maine Cancer Foundation. Hi, Julia. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you.
Tell us how events play into your mission and about your big event, Try for the Cure, this summer.
Sure. So the Try for a Cure is, I know you were discussing earlier that some of these events are kind of the bread and butter of organizations, and that couldn't be more true for us. The Try, you know, for example, last year we raised $2 million, and then we turned around and put $2.8 million back out into the state that year. So it's a major driver of our mission, and so we have definitely been pivoting to make it still happen. We were fortunate kind of with the timeline, because our participants register through a drawing that happens back in February. So when this all happened, you know, we already had a full roster. So we've actually been trying to, we found some silver linings, one of which being that we can open registration back up, which is really neat to have participants who maybe didn't get in on the drawing or have been intimidated by doing a full swim, bike, and run, who can now sign on and, you know, do their own race. You don't have to get up early in the morning. If you don't want to swim, that's great. You can transition and do a duathlon this year, just do the run and the bike. So it's been definitely a process, but we've been really amazed by how our participants have embraced the transition. You know, everybody who's participating has a connection to cancer and understands that, you know, through all this social distancing, cancer has not social distanced at all, has not stopped. So, the mission is just as important, if not more important than ever. And we've just, as I say, we've been really fortunate that our participants who are registered have embraced it, and we've also had the benefit of adding additional women to our roster.
Well, thanks so much for calling in, Julia, and good luck this year. Julia Batchelder, Events Manager for the Maine Cancer Foundation. We're going to go to Mick, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Mick. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on. So
yeah, go ahead.
Oh, cool. So I'm approaching this from like a different angle. I represent PortCon Maine. We are a hobby convention that happens every summer. We've been doing it for 17 some odd years now. So it's all about like anime and comic books and gaming and stuff like that. So obviously we're not going to get 5,000 people together to do that in person. And we have been trying to figure out what like a hobby convention looks like online. And we have set up a Patreon for that, where people sort of get together and break out into little like Netflix parties to watch TV shows together, play games together, and then hosting like digital panels about, you know, costuming and photography and things like that.
That sounds so cool, Mick. How's it going?
It's going pretty well so far, honestly. We usually get around 5,000 attendees. We have 100 people signed up at like the paid level of support, but then, you know, probably about 1,200 people who have just come and experienced some of the stuff that we've had to offer. But it's really interesting because like video gaming is one of those things that's like always online, right? But then there is that like in-person experience that a lot of our attendees were really, really lacking. And actually just today we're launching our like digital costume contest. So like one of the biggest things at our convention every year is like a big cosplay masquerade, and there's all kinds of awards and the parade. And, you know, it's just kind of like one of those fun, very celebratory things. So, you know, as I said, I'm glad that there's all these fundraising groups that are doing all this awesome work and transitioning to online events. But it's been fun for us to come up with some fun stuff for folks to do and be able to participate in their hobbies digitally.
All right. Well, Mick, thanks so much for calling in. Go ahead. Is that Kelly or Lynn?
It's Lynn.
Hi, Lynn.
I actually agree with him. There's that element that people want to see people face to face, right? And it's really exciting that all of these things are getting creative, because we're being forced to do that because of the situation. I worry about any of it continuing to completely wipe away meetings or events, because that really affects economic impacts, right? You Trek Across Maine brings people from all over the place to come and stay in hotels and eat in restaurants and experience our state. And that's really what the meetings and conference industry offers people is to be able to see another destination. Maybe your business is bringing you there, so you extend a little bit and do a little vacation too. So hopefully, I think that this is it's a good thing, and I think it's a good thing for a short time. But we hope to get back to normal one day.
Okay. Well, Mick, thanks for calling in. Saren on Facebook writes, while not a race or festival, I very much appreciated the online live support provided to cancer patients offered by the Beth Wright Cancer Center in Ellsworth. I was diagnosed with cancer on March 16th, just as the pandemic struck, and have been unable to access in-person support. The Zoom support groups and support services have been a wonderful substitution. I hope they continue post-COVID-19. And Vanessa on Facebook writes, EcoMaine educators are missing their tour guests and offering Zoom tours while we are social distancing. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from New England Cancer Specialists, proud to be a member of the Dana-Farber Cancer Care Collaborative and committed to helping patients achieve their best outcome. And the Lunder Foundation, founding partner of Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical. On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
Cyrus Herman Kochmar Curtis, publisher of magazines and newspapers, including the Ladies' Home Journal and the Saturday Evening Post, was born in Portland on June 18, 1850. Cyrus's middle name, Herman Kochmar, was after a German organist who had lived with the Curtis family for several years. Cyrus was a native of Portland, but moved to Philadelphia to start the successful Curtis Publishing Company. Cyrus is the donor of the Kochmar Memorial Organ, located in Portland City Hall.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of DN Wealth Advisors and the Maine Seacoast Mission. Happy birthday, Maine!
International response to COVID-19 highlights strengths and fumbles from leading nations.
The incompetence with which the United States has dealt with this issue.
Some see a chance for China to take charge on the global stage.
The Chinese don't say that our civilization is the civilization that you should emulate.
On the next Intelligence Squared US, will coronavirus reshape the world order in China's favor?
And that's coming up this afternoon at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. We're talking about events that are going virtual due to the pandemic. Joining me, Lynn Tillotson with Visit Portland and Kelly McCormick with the Maine Association of Nonprofits. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or quickly post on our Facebook page. Right now, we're joined by Eric Topper with Maine Audubon. Hi, Eric. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So, Eric, I've seen some emails about Audubon's native plant sale. That was supposed to just happen, right? What did you do instead?
That's true. We Maine Audubon's native plant sale and festival, it has become our largest annual in-person event. Happens in the middle of June every year. It was originally scheduled for last Saturday, and we've spent the last couple of months trying to enable the educational components of that event into a new website, a plant finder database, MaineNativePlants.org, is a way where people can learn about the plants and the sort of values we're trying to impart on our landscapes. And then the plant sales have transitioned entirely to online sales and contactless pickup at both our Fields Pond Audubon Center up in Holden and mostly out of the Gilsland Farm Audubon Center here in Falmouth.
All right. Well, Eric, thanks so much for calling in. Eric Topper with Maine Audubon. We're going to go to Cheryl, who's calling from Old Town. Hi, Cheryl. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thank you. It's lovely that so many of these virtual experiences are available to a segment of the population, but this is just a reminder that there is still a digital divide in the state of Maine, and those folks who had to take their kiddos to the library parking lot to do their remote learning homework are probably not going to be going to the library parking lot to attend these virtual events.
Yeah, Cheryl, I think I thank you for pointing that out. And Kelly, I'm guessing that in so many ways this pandemic is pointing out divides within our society, and I'm sure within the community that you work with, there's some real hope that this is going to be a catalyst for some change.
Oh, absolutely. But there, yeah, and we're still tackling the digital divide, if you will, and trying to, and I think it's also how else can we go beyond virtual? Is it more phone calling? Is it more mailings? Is it, you know, written interactions? There's a lot to be solved still in that realm, I think. But there is a lot of opportunity for growth, and it shows this need that we have for the broadband access in our state as well.
Thank you, Cheryl. An email from Carrie. Do your guests have any examples of how virtual event organizers, especially conferences, are bringing a strong sense of Maine to their events? For instance, are they broadcasting live from a beautiful northern lake or Grange Hall? Or maybe mailing everyone a whoopie pie and a can of Moxie? Lynn, those sound like some great suggestions.
I love those suggestions. It hasn't happened yet because, you know, meetings and conferences have just essentially stopped. But I think that's a great idea.
Well, there you go, Carrie. Maybe you and Lynn ought to hook up. An email from Nelson. I'm part of a family that has had an annual reunion for about the past 100 years. Wow. We used to meet for several days at a campground, 7 days at a campground. We're now down to 3 days. Several reunions have topped 100 people. This year, we are going to Zoom the reunion in a matter of hours. It should be interesting because I have never Zoomed. Kelly, there are a lot of us who have never done something before the last few weeks, aren't there?
The silver lining is we're all accidental tech experts now, it seems. You know, I think one of the things that I know Chris Newell had told me about that made his event successful was the preparation he did with all of the presenters and artists and making sure that everybody is comfortable with technology in advance. So, again, the practice makes perfect and coming up with plan Bs and understanding that tech glitches, dogs barking, kids wanting your attention, everything, things are going to go wrong, and we're all in it together.
David posted on Facebook, the virtual Maine Green Bank Summit is happening next Thursday, June 25th from 2 to 5 p.m. This is an educational event about a statewide bank to invest in halting climate change, and the link is on our Facebook page. So thanks, David, for posting that on our Facebook page. I invite anybody who has an event, go ahead and do that. Post on our Facebook page, Maine Calling's page today in the comment section, or always go to the community calendar at mainepublic.org and put your event there. We're going to go to Anne, who's calling from the Center for Grieving Children. Hi, Anne. What are you all doing differently this year?
Well, it's totally changed everything. Programming, you know, our peer support groups are all gone online, doing more webinars, doing conferences online. But the real fun one we have coming up is we have a virtual pet walk coming up on June 27th, and we think it should be a lot of fun. We also have, you know, we have pet support or as part of our program, so it's a great joining of the two, and it's an opportunity for children, you know, to get involved as well. And we all know how important pets are. Very often for a child, the first experience of death is the loss of a pet. But just getting out right now, getting out of the house, obviously everybody's got to walk their dog, right? So go onto our website, cgcmaine.org, and you could put together a fundraising page, because like everybody, all the nonprofits right now, we're not looking at great, you know, things have changed. So it is a very much a concern.
And right. I've admired all of the converting of your support groups to online programming. I think you guys have done a fantastic job with that.
Thank you. Thank you. It was quite a turnaround, and it's going really well. And then the latest thing we did is we're doing a training right now of all our facilitators to become facilitators going forward. And that was a new one for us too. So changing times for sure.
And thank you for calling in. And Kelly, I wanted to ask you, if the Maine Association of Nonprofits has any kind of guidance for nonprofits who are scrambling right now, so many nonprofits in Maine, I'm thinking about theaters, for example, are really dependent not only in the summer season, but on gathering people together. Do you all have seminars for them or a guidebook for them? And not only how to survive the pandemic, but how to think about creative, either virtual events or other kinds of events to make it through this time?
Well, we just released a reopening guidebook for nonprofits with checklists, some best practices, recommended practices. It sounds like the events should be a second addendum. We have a whole section in there that talks about events and such, but taking it to another level, we don't have anything in particular to offer right now, but we love to connect nonprofits with one another, and we would be absolutely happy to connect with those that have some questions and want to find inspiration in their peers and what others are doing across the state.
And Lynn, something we haven't talked about yet is Maine's wedding industry. Mm. Tell me how large that is and what we're seeing this year.
Yeah, especially the destination wedding element where people are coming from out of state and bringing all their people. That's been incredibly hit hard. I honestly forgot. I don't know the number, and I apologize for that. I could follow up with you. But I know most of the wedding industry is just shutting down right now because they can't gather. And, you know, people want to gather with their family and friends on that special day. So many people are canceling and rescheduling for next year, which is a good thing. At least we won't lose them. But it's been a big one. And, you know, all of those businesses, along with tourism businesses, are hanging by a thread, just hoping to make it through this year to be able to come out of this on the other side. So they're working really hard to do whatever they can. And like all of these virtual events, getting creative, right? They're just doing things differently.
Yeah, I'm looking at a study from the University of Southern Maine from last year, Marry Me, pegged indirect and direct spending from weddings in Maine at almost $1 billion, $937 million, and that was in 2017. Do you see that perhaps next year when we're hoping next year when everything changes back to more like it was before, that it's going to be difficult to book venues, to plan a wedding in Maine?
It may be. You know, people are rebooking, but they're rebooking later in the summer, later in the fall of 2021, because everything's going to really depend on a vaccine. So the beginning part of the year will still be really quiet with everything that's happening, unless something miraculous happens here pretty quick. So certainly I would, if somebody was looking at rebooking, they should rebook quickly for sure to get their spot.
All right. Anna on Facebook writes, Skudik Arts for All is offering virtual workshops and art camp. And there's a link to both of those on the Maine Calling Facebook page. Kelly, tell us about some other virtual events. Tell us what Girls Day was like this year.
Oh, Girls Day at the State House?
Yes.
That was a wonderful event that the Maine Women's Lobby put on, and again, it was one day but turned into over the course of a week, and it was a hybrid event in that it used video components, live panel interviews, and it was a great success. It was a really great opportunity of collaboration and for the girls to hear from a number of different voices, but again, they weren't sitting in front of a computer all day. They had the ability to kind of go day to day and have a different experience each day, which was nice. Another great event that happened recently was the Immigrant Legal Action Projects. They usually have a Cella Soiree, which is an evening gala, but they turned it into a Tele Soiree. And it was a concise, hour-long program filled with videos, messages from their board members, and that was a really lovely online event. So I have loads of events I could tell you about.
Well, and I need to add, I would be remiss if I didn't add some of the events that Maine Public is doing right now. You may have heard about the tiny screen concerts via Zoom. The last concert is going to be July 1st, the last of this series. But apparently, they're coming back in the fall, so they've been quite successful. There's the Maine Public Museum portal, a way for people to explore museum exhibitions. And we're about to do a virtual cooking contest. So it's the Dash of Maine Cooking Contest, and you'll be able to find information on the Maine Public website. So we are among, Kelly, the nonprofits trying to find creative ways to virtually serve the audience.
Absolutely. Another great one I've seen recently is Pride Across Maine, which is a partnership of 12 organizations across the state, taking Pride Month, which is usually the month of June, and extending it throughout the summer. They have their virtual parade is coming up next Sunday, and they are still currently accepting entries. It could be a 10 to 15 second video photo of people in their best Pride gear, however they want to show how they're celebrating Pride. And you can find more information about that on their Facebook page at Pride Across Maine.
All right. And yeah, that was supposed to be the big parade was supposed to be this Sunday. So many different ways we're thinking about things. Lynn, take us forward 5 years. How do you think this will change events and conferences in Maine, if at all?
If it's meetings and conferences, I don't think it'll change a lot, other than maybe small in-state board meetings, that sort of thing. But to have a true, Maine is a sought-after destination to bring a meeting or a conference, because who doesn't want to come to Maine, right? So their attendance numbers grow, and that's really important for them. You know, this industry is going to be an economic driver. It always has been. It allows all of these businesses to stay in business and all of the employees to stay employed. And so we have to continue with live events, with live large events. But I see some of those small little board meetings continuing on with something like this.
All right. Well, thank you both for joining us today in this ever-changing world. Our guest, the voice you just heard, Lynn Tillotson, President and CEO of Visit Portland, and Kelly McCormick, Development and Marketing Manager for the Maine Association of Nonprofits. Lucy Suchak ran the board today. Today's Maine Calling program will be rebroadcast at 7. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources, by visiting mainecalling.org. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. The Maine CDC briefings with Dr. Nirav Shah are now being held 3 days a week. There is not one airing today. There is not a briefing today. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.